Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of the world's best-selling sales book, The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we're here today on Sell or Die to make sure that you get the information that you need in order to make more sales, more money, keep your job, fire your boss, and take over the company.
That's right. This show is all about you and how we can help you. And all you need to do is find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Tell both your friends.
And then give us a 5-star review.
Okay. And today's show is all about how you can improve your life. I want to make sure that you get that, because when we start to talk about what happens in the sales world, we mean it.
Oh, yeah. So let's get into it.
It's time to sell or die.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Inbound Sales Day. I'm your host, Mike Peachy, Director of Sales at HubSpot. And we have with us a very special guest, Jeffrey Gittimer, who's the CEO of By Gittimer. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to see you.
So I'll tee you up. I'll do you some service. So Jeffrey's actually a best-selling author, and he's written 13 sales books. A couple of his most famous titles is The Sales Bible and The Little Red Book of Selling. So Jeff, today he's doing podcasts, he's creating tons of content, he's out there educating the world about not only the topic we have today, but about a tremendous amount of topics under the sphere of sales. Now, today we're focused specifically on lowering sales barriers and the new way to succeed at objection handling and sales. So Jeffrey, talk to us a little bit about how you think about objection handling, how you think about, really what's changed as time has gone on about the objections that we're getting from our buyers.
From a 30,000 foot view, if you're taking it, there's a difference to 35,000 and 41,000 feet. You know what the difference is? At 35,000, you're flying American Airlines. At 41,000, you're flying your own jet. And so I'm going to give you the 41,000 foot view. My mantra of sales is people don't like to be sold, but they love to buy. And if you can find out why they want to buy, all barriers go away. I don't call it an objection. I call it a barrier. And if you can lower the barrier, get it all the way down to the ground, you can win the sale. It's the customer's feeling a risk. They don't want to move forward. And your job is to make sure that that risk goes away. If you can make that risk go away, the customer will buy regardless of the price barrier, regardless of anything that's in the way. They perceive the value. They perceive the difference. They're willing to move forward. And you as a salesperson have understood their motive, their real reason for buying. When the customer gives you an objection, that's actually interest. Otherwise, they would just say, I'm not interested anymore. I got to go. Oh, and by the way, when the customer says they're not interested, that means you are not interesting. Because if you were a pitcher for the New York Yankees, what are you going to say? Not interested? If it was Bryce Harper, for example, you're going to say not interested? If it was Mario Lemieux or Sidney Crosby, you're going to say not interested? If it was Steph Curry or LeBron James, you're going to say not interested? No, no, no. You're going to listen to whatever it is they have to say. So not interested means you are not interesting. You have not caught my attention. You haven't earned the right to move forward. Okay. Well, let me talk about sales barriers and sales objections. There's been no new sales barriers in 100 years except for one. One new sales objection in 100 years of selling. And the objection is, drumroll, I can get it cheaper online. So you know, you're in Barnes & Noble, I don't want to mention names, but Barnes & Noble, and you see a book for $17.99, and the first thing you do is you take out your smartphone and you Amazon it. You Amazon shop it. Everyone Amazon shops everything wherever you are. You might be at Target, you might be at Home Depot, wherever you are, you look at it and you go, oh, $16.99, it's only $11.99, and it's Prime. So I prime it. Priming is a new verb. You haven't been able to prove that I don't need it so bad that I can't wait 2 days for it. Now, sometimes I need it bad. And so I'll go to the manager. I'll go, hey, I can get this on Amazon cheaper. Will you match the price? I even still try to get the Amazon discount. If they say, no, we don't match the price, I'll still buy it if I want it. $3 or $5 doesn't matter. But sometimes it's $100. So price can be a real barrier now on the internet. And Amazon is going to be the competitor of everybody. You can, it's refrigerators, it's televisions, it's shoes, it's underwear. And while it started with books, and they still dominate the book business, Amazon dominates. They are 70% of the book business in the world. That's pretty cool. When you consider that 10 years ago, they were pretty much worthless. So think about that. You know, Barnes & Noble dominated. Now Barnes & Noble is like hanging on. And all the other bookstore chains like Borders have gone out. Borders, in their brilliance, discontinued their partnership with Amazon and decided to build their own website. That was the kiss of death. So now I want to talk, you know, you get an objection from somebody as a salesperson. You go, oh, no, I got an objection. The guy said the price is too high. No, no. Sales dude or sales dudess. That means the buyer's interested in doing business with you. You just haven't been able to figure out how to overcome that barrier or lower that barrier. So I'm looking at it from a perspective of you haven't shared enough value with me yet, and my fear of buying is still high or higher than your price. So I'm not, you have to bring the value above the price and then I will buy. Bring the value above the price and then I will buy. You, Michael, you've gone out and bought a car, correct? Even though you live in a sort of a metropolitan area, do you own a car or are you not?
I don't own a car now, but I've owned cars in the past.
Okay, so you go to the car dealership and it's a, you can buy any car you want. You don't necessarily buy the cheapest car. You buy the one you want. I mean, Tesla doesn't have the cheapest car on the market, but they're selling a bunch of them. Have you ever ridden in a Tesla?
I wish I could say I have. I've actually.
Well, here's the deal. If you ever, it's like riding in a golf cart, except it looks fancier. And you can't tell when it's on, you can't tell when it's off. But it's the coolest thing you've ever been in your life. And you press down on the accelerator, and it's like you're going to the moon in 3 seconds. So the challenge that you have is, what's the perceived value? I'm going to buy a new car. And I'm either going to buy a Cadillac, because GM is one of my customers, or a Tesla. And those are my only two options. But I've been driving a Lexus for almost 20 years. Why am I going to go to another car? Well, I'm obviously going to go to my customer's car if I possibly can. And I have been in a Tesla. They're like the coolest things on the planet. It's way beyond price. Obviously, you know, millions of people have bought one. And I'm looking at it from the standpoint of either lower that barrier in order to be able to get the sale, but understand why that barrier exists. That's most important. What has caused that barrier? Because sometimes when your price is too high, there's other reasons that the person perceives the price is too high. Either they don't like you, or they don't like your product, or they don't like your company, or it's a combination of those things, or they don't perceive that the quality of the product is there enough for them to be able to justify the additional cost of it. Sometimes they think that the service might be bad, or that you have an online reputation that's bad. Think about now, when you go to a restaurant, you don't really care about the price of the food. You care about their Yelp rating. Or if you go on a vacation, you don't really care about the price of the hotel room. You care about their TripAdvisor rating. And so I'm looking at it from the perspective of, you can lower barriers online. You can lower barriers with social proof. You can lower barriers with all kinds of testimonials or a YouTube channel that didn't exist 10 years ago. It just didn't. And they tried, there's all kinds of other sideline things, like Foursquare used to be a program that people used. They don't use it much anymore. At least I don't think they do, because I don't. But I was into it like crazy. And I'd rate the park that I took my little kid to, and I was the mayor of the park. And, you know, they give you a badge, so they sort of gamify it so that you can. I'm still the mayor of the park. I haven't done it for like 3 years, but I had so many likes in there that I'm still the mayor. But I want to, other people will look at that and go, oh, it must be good. Maybe I'll take my kid there. They've lowered the barrier by saying, oh, this other people think it's okay, therefore it must be good. That's why Amazon does their star ratings. You know, you're going to buy a book. Okay, it's a $24 book. I can get it on Amazon for $18, but should I buy it? Oh, wait, there's 28 ratings of this book, and 20 of them are 5-star. Let me read that. But actually, here's what I do. I read the 1-stars. I want to find out why people didn't buy. Again, that will, so I read the 5-stars, but I always read the 1-stars just in case, because some people are just angry and they want, you know, they're pissed off, or maybe their competitor is going on and rating it low or whatever. But I still want to make sure that I feel good enough about it to be able to buy from it. We're taking live questions. I want to make sure that nobody's got their feelings hurt.
So I'm monitoring the live questions here. I think one interesting question that we have popping up is, how are you seeing, so you're speaking a lot about how online and how social proof is really influencing being able to bring barriers down, mm-hmm. And increase the value that we perceive in different contexts. But when a salesperson is the force that's representing value on behalf of an organization, mm-hmm. salespeople actually dealing with these barriers that come up now, and how do you think that salespeople actually need to change the way that they're dealing with these barriers to be more successful against changing objections?
Okay, the key seems pretty obvious, but it's not done enough. The key is preparation. I use Usain Bolt as an example. He can win a gold medal in under 10 seconds. And the question is, how long did it take him to prepare to win that medal? And the key is in the preparation for doing it. And this is the biggest key in sales objections or sales barriers. During the, you know, if someone says your price is too high, you go, price is too high? I never heard that before. No, you've heard it a million times. Why are you not going in prepared to overcome that objection or to lower that barrier? Why are you not preparing for the 10 objections that you know are going to happen? Like, your delivery is slow, your reputation's bad online, all the things that could possibly pop into the customer's mind. If you don't walk in completely prepared for every single objection or barrier that's thrown at you, it is likely you will either lose the sale or postpone the sale. One of those two things. And the buyer might say something like, let me think about it, or send me a proposal. And let me think about it means, dude, you haven't sold me yet. At the moment, the answer is no. And when I got that objection in New York City, I would say to the buyer, I said, look, when someone says they want to think about it, it only means two things. Either my price is too high or you don't like me. Which one is it? And by flatlining the guy, I would actually get a real answer. No, it's neither one. I said, okay, what is it then? Or I can go through some lengthy, stupid old 1972 technique about, well, let's think it over together. I don't want to do that. What I want to do is I want to be direct with someone so that they respect what it is that I'm talking about. Like, dude, either you don't like me or my price is too high. Which one? No, I like you. And I put the buyer on his or her heels so that they might give me the true objection. Like, I have to talk to one of my coworkers, or, you know, what I find is that they're usually not the real decision maker. When someone says they have to think about it, what they mean is, I got to go ask my daddy or I got to go ask my mommy because I can't spend this on my own. And so then I'll set up, okay, great, let's do this. Let's get your mommy or let's get your daddy and let's talk about it. But if I don't want them to convey my message, I want to convey my message. So I'll ask for a three-way or some kind of, you know, way to, and now it's so easy with Zoom or with Google Hangouts, you can create a three-way meeting where people can actually see each other like you and I are seeing me. It's amazing what you can do now that you could never do 5 years ago.
That's cool. And I think the part about that that's so relevant, right, is that you're trying to really pull out, like, what's the actual reason that something's not happening, not your perceived reason.
Right.
You're digging, you're understanding, you're listening, and you're really synthesizing, like, what's the true issue here?
Right. And it's usually beyond the actual stated thing. So totally. You have to find out why. What's causing this objection to come up? What's causing this barrier to appear? And for the most part, it's value versus price. I don't perceive enough value to, you know, I have a high risk tolerance, but obviously this is higher than my tolerance. So I have to lower that risk. It's the biggest barrier in sales is the unspoken risk that the buyer won't tell you about. They might get in trouble. Somebody might value judge their thing. Like, it's so easy. You know, if you remember in the old days, but you don't really look that old, so you may not remember the old days. It's no one ever got fired for buying IBM. That was a statement. Now you buy IBM, you get fired because there's like 20 other places where you can go to get a better deal. And that's why companies like Oracle buy Sun Microsystems so they can have a machine to go with their software. And this is compatible. We plug it in. It's ready to go. Just buy the whole deal.
So on that point, we've got a question coming in from Mario. And he's asking...
Super Mario or just regular Mario?
Super Mario.
Okay,
Super
cool.
Mario has a question for us. He wants to know how would you go about overcoming skepticism when someone's had a bad experience with a prior solution? And I think a key piece of this is like, as a salesperson, you want to be able to lower barriers, and it's easy to say something like, all right, well, you know, if you don't like it, you can bring it back, or you get a money back guarantee, right? But a lot of times as salespeople, we actually aren't put in that context. We have to engage for multi-year deals, and we have to engage in a way that is really forming a true partnership. When someone's had a bad experience in the past, how do you think about overcoming that barrier?
There's only one way. The salesperson at that point is frozen. There's nothing that they can do. But I'm going to give you a three-word answer that will eliminate that and allow you to make the sale. The three-word answer is voice of customer. The two-word answer is deploy testimonials. Now, most salespeople go into the sale unprepared. They have no videos. They have no online where they can just click to a LinkedIn reference or to a YouTube reference or to a Facebook reference where the customer is actually speaking about the company in a positive way. Like, hey, we had a bad experience. They overcame it. Now we love them for life. We used to use blah, blah. Now we use them and they're the greatest. In fact, we used to use you guys. You screwed up and we switched and now we came back. Like you go to your dry cleaner and they knock buttons off your shirt and you switch dry cleaners, but the one that you switched to is even crappier than the one that you went to. So now you go back to your old dry cleaner. But the challenge that you have is if you don't employ a third party voice, you lose. The salesperson feels like they're on this island, that they're there by themselves. Incorrect. If you have 500 customers, you actually have 500 salespeople that you can bring into the meeting with you that will speak more authoritatively than you could ever do it. And so the key is, this is pretty interesting, the key in overcoming the objection or lowering the barrier is deepening your relationship with your customers so that they will speak kindly about you online. And some salespeople are going, yeah, but some of my customers won't do that. Right, but some will. Tell me what you can do, not what you can't do. And let's pick the ones that will talk about me and let's, you know, use your iPhone or whatever phone you use. It'll even work on an Android, and you video them it sideways so that it fits up on your Facebook page or it fits up on your YouTube channel, and you put 20 of those up there for each one of the things that might go wrong, not enough quality, delivery time, service response, whatever it is, whatever the potential barrier could be, and there's only 10 objections. That's it. So figure out what to overcome for each of the 10 barriers, and now you can win the sale. Oh, I'm glad you brought up our service. Let me show you what's been happening lately. Click, play, click, play, click, play. 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds, and begin to build the trust that will lead to recognizing that the value might be there now.
And that's such a good point. A lot of times we really have to have our customers step up and speak on our behalf.
Yep.
Especially in a context when somebody's nervous or they've had a certain type of experience in the past. Another question that we got in, this one's coming from Pamela. She's wondering what's more important. Like she's kind of asking this question on how can salespeople gather social proof on themselves versus the product they sell or the company that they represent. I kind of get the sense that without good social proof on what you're actually representing, you might be a little bit stuck. Mm-hmm. But how do you think about that? Do you think there's any possibility that a salesperson as a representative of a brand can overcome a specific context having to do with the brand?
They go home at night, and instead of watching some stupid-ass television show, they go to Mother Google, and they start by Googling themselves. And they begin to see what the customer sees. If you come to my place, I'm going to Google you, Michael. No offense. I'm going to see what you've been doing. I'm going to see what you're up to. I'm going to see who you are versus who you say you are. So I recommend that every person on the planet go to a GoDaddy kind of place and register their name.com tonight. And if your name is taken because it's common, yours is not, but if your name is taken because you're John Smith, you put the great John Smith or the one and only johnsmith.com or iamjohnsmith.com. Don't go to biz or info. Try to get .com because that's the benchmark. That's the standard. .co means you lost an M someplace. And the challenge that you have is you post a one-page website that night on my philosophy for how I treat customers. And if your customer searches for you, they will find your website and they will have your one pager printed out by the side of their computer when you walk in the door. That's a sign that they've done the research on you and you can now start to talk to them. But every time you post on LinkedIn, every time you post on every time you make a tweet, every time you establish an account somewhere online or post a YouTube video or make a speech someplace or go on Facebook Live and do a podcast, Mother Google searches that and she'll put that on a page. And somebody will say, well, I'm number one on Google. I don't care. I want you to be the first 10 pages. Number one means you've finagled it somehow or the other. And Mother Google doesn't like when you finagle. They punish you when you finagle. But if you're if you Google me, I'm the first 200 pages. Because I've been writing for 20 years and, you know, I've established a reputation. But I started with one column in print. So now it's up to the person who's listening right now to develop their own personal reputation, their own personal brand, their own personal resume, so that if your boss decides they don't want you anymore, you can go someplace and have an actual, you know, platform that you're dealing from, a social platform, social relevance, let's call it that. Okay, so you look at it from that perspective and then say, okay, I now have my own social proof for myself. Now let me go gather it from my customers. And if you can do both of those things, if you have social proof from the customer and social proof of yourself, you're going to win the value challenge. Where's my value? How does my customer perceive me as somebody that can help me? That's where I'm at with that.
Love that. And we've got another question here around really the difference is, like, is there a true difference between having a tangible product and being in a service industry? Do any of these principles become more important based on the type of service that your company delivers?
I actually get that all the time. You know, someone will say, well, this is for a product. I sell a service. It's the same damn thing. If you're selling on the phone or you're selling face-to-face, it's the same damn thing. If I don't prove myself, if I'm not Googleable, if I don't have third-party testimonials, if I'm not good on the phone, if I don't sound believable. Now, when you're face-to-face, you have to look the part. I don't know whether you've ever seen this or not, but I cut a cartoon out of the New Yorker when the internet first started, and it was a dog at a keyboard. And he turns to his owner and says, when you're on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And that's, you know, you can hide behind that to a point. Or on the phone, you can hide behind that to a point. When you're face-to-face, you have to be dressed and have a nice shirt on and, you know, or maybe a coat and tie or whatever, at least a sport jacket. For you millennials out there, a tie is something that you put around your neck and it hangs down from your suit because no one wears ties anymore. But I think that the challenge that a salesperson has is just perceive your product as the same. You prove value or you lose. The first sale that's made is the salesperson. If I don't buy you, I'm not buying anything. And what I like to do is what we did before we went live is I want to ask where you grew up. That tells me everything about you. Because if you grew up in Wichita, Kansas versus Hartford, Connecticut, you're a different kind of person. if you grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, you're a different kind of person, or in Dallas, you're a different kind of person. So I get that you're a football fan. You may like the Pats, or you may like the Giants, or you may like, because you don't really, Connecticut's sort of sportless, correct? Unless you have UConn.
You're New York or Boston Infinity. That's kind of.
So which one of your teams that I hate do you like?
Well, so I'm actually a split. I'm a split guy. So I like the New York Giants for football, but I'm a big Boston Celtics fan.
Wow, I really hate you. Okay, so the challenge for that is I grew up in Philly, so I'm Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, and I hate the Celtics. I hate the Pats. I hate the Giants. We hate all teams. When the Giants are playing the Cowboys, if you're an Eagles fan, we root for injuries. But the challenge that we have is, at least I know that now, so we can sort of barb back and forth. You know, we can bet a hot dog on the Giants game this year. I can call Eli Manning the luckiest quarterback in the history of pro football. But you look at it from the perspective of, if I can make you smile, or if I can feel you're relaxed a little bit, now I can really talk about my product and my service.
Yeah, no, it's such a good point. And I think the big thing that I'm taking away from the session so far is that so much of this is, it's just like anything else that we do in life. It's being extremely thoughtful and applying a ton of mental anticipatory energy ahead of it.
And being ready. Be ready.
Just being ready for anything. Totally. Well, That's the big message we're getting.
Right. They say ready, get, set, go. And the emphasis is on the go, but it's actually be ready.
1,000%. Now, the key question I have, though, is sometimes, no matter how prepared we are, we end up in a situation that we're not prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
When you do find yourself in that case, what do you do?
Well, there's a thing in sales called resilience. And your resilience is going to depend in a large part about your experience. You know, if you're a 20-year rep, you're going to handle it a lot different than if you're a 3-month-old rep. But the best thing to do is be honest. I'm unaware of how I can talk about that. Will you give me 24 hours and let me come back? Don't leave without an appointment, but don't try to make something up to where you look stupid and really lose the sale and lose your own reputation, because someone will tweet about it the second you leave. The key is to maintain your professionalism. If someone comes up with a barrier, resilience is how you react, respond, and recover from what someone says to you or does to you. And resilience is key in selling, because sometimes people will tell you no, especially if you're on the phone, and then you have to bounce back to the next guy who you believe will tell you yes. I developed a humorous thing for salespeople when they cold call and get rejected. You walk into some place and go, no, we're satisfied with who we've got. We're not interested today. And you go, oh, wow, I'm so happy you're not interested. You're my third call of the day, and it usually takes me five people to tell me no before I can get the one person to tell me yes. And I was wondering if you knew anybody else that might not be interested. And then you relax the guy. And if I can make him smile, I might be able to get the one more thing. Or you can go, okay, well, here's my brochure. Here's my crappy business card. You know, think of us. And the guy shreds it when you leave. It's like a stupid leave behind. So I want to have fun when I make sales. So I'm going to make sure that I make the other guy have fun back. And if I can make him smile, it makes me smile. And he's a little bit more relaxed. I go, come on, give me a chance. Most people will take the first rejection. As opposed to high school when you were dating, did you take the first rejection?
Can't.
No.
It's just not.
10th rejection, did you? No. So the challenge for you is to get, where's the tenacity? Where's the tenacity when you were 4 years old and you were in the checkout aisle of the grocery store with your mother and you wanted a candy bar? And your mom said no. Did you take the first no? No. Did you take the 10th no? No. You were willing to take corporal punishment to get that candy bar. You're willing to throw a fit to get that candy bar. And right now you'd say, well, here's my card. Thanks for the no. I'll talk to you later. Good, think of us. Call me later. Bye. No, I don't. That's not why I'm there. I'm there. I've already got my $50 or $100 or $200 invested in the call. The lead didn't come in for free. or the you know, my travel time to that customer didn't happen for free. There's all an investment. Every time the phone rings or you make a phone out, there's an investment in there. So I want to make sure that I'm capitalizing the best I possibly can on that investment and not taking the first no or the first barrier that's thrown at me as the real one or the final one. I'm going to find out why. I'm going to find out the reason or the motive behind it. What made them say yes the last time? You know, if you don't like my office supplies, there was a reason. Was it because of poor delivery? Was it because of perceived value? What was the deal? Oh, you're getting it on Amazon. Oh, I see. And you're Amazon Prime. Oh, I see. Well, let me explain why or how we've been able to overcome that. And then you talk about it. But let your customers talk about it. They used to use Amazon Prime. Now they went back to ABC Supplies because they're local. Because they can pop something in a car and deliver it.
So, Jeffrey, we're wrapping up here. We got
no, no. I want more. No, come on. This is not fair.
It's short and sweet, baby. That's the type of content that people like.
Okay,
that's
cool. Yeah, I agree.
That's what they like these days. So, finish yourself on one final point. What's the one thing you want everybody to leave with today?
Go to Gittimer.com and the Gittimer Learning Academy and sign up and pay. Oh, you mean the final thing for a barrier? Okay. Wake up in the morning and be ready to make your first sales call before you leave the home. Most people wake up, take a shower, drink a cup of coffee, check their email, do a bunch of stuff, and then rush to get someplace on time. I don't want you to be on time. The late, great Earl Pertnoy, my mentor for 35 years, said, if you're not a half an hour early, you're late. And I want them to be ready to make the sale by either listening to something, a podcast or a lesson or something that gets them rolling in the morning, and that when they go to that first appointment or they make that first dial, that they are ready with every single barrier, every single objection that they possibly can have and how to overcome it, or at least how to dialogue about it. That will help them more than anything else on the planet, Michael.
I'm a VP of sales. I'm figuring out how to get my team more leads, how to get my team more better data. How do you do that online? What do you recommend that they go out and do?
Mm-hmm. So content marketing is really a tactic. And I think the buyer is really changing. So, you know, when they engage with salespeople, they're much further down in the funnel. Mm-hmm. Than in historically.
Agreed.
So, you know, what content marketing is really good for is to shorten the sales cycle for your reps because, you know, the buyer is entering much lower in the funnel.
Mm-hmm.
So they should, you know, take a lot less of your salesperson's time.
However, they have to perceive that you have the value to be able to make that happen, that you're the
Correct.
Person who they might look to be the provider.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to be anywhere in the funnel.
And your content does that job.
Yes.
So, you know, your video.
Your readable content.
The way it's displayed as well.
So, yeah. And people consume content differently. So some people will read a blog post. Some people will read an ebook.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will watch an overview video on YouTube. Some people will follow you on Facebook or Twitter. So you really have to put out content in all these different ways that'll touch the buyers, you know.
In the way they want to receive it.
In the way they want to receive it, exactly. Yeah.
We only do Twitter. Right. You're going to die.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just one channel. Right.
But the challenge for somebody like you is to be able to not simply have the knowledge and have the understanding, but be able to consult with your client so that they know the best way. What's the
right.
best multiple mix? What's the best way that they can go out and express themselves to where they'll find their potential customer?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where HubSpot adds a lot of value is for the entrepreneurs, the business owners that are out there. You know, they might have disparate systems for, you know, their website. That might be on WordPress, say. Their blog might be on Blogger. You know, their email might be on Constant Contact. and you know their social media might be on Hootsuite. So they have all these disparate systems that don't talk to each other. You know, they're using, say, Google Analytics to try and extract some data. And it's just very challenging to get those systems to work together to get a cohesive understanding of how am I performing digitally? Am I moving the needle for myself? And HubSpot really helps with that.
So many people have Constant Contact or many people have MailChimp. What do you say to those people?
They're great tools. They're really good tools. And it really kind of depends on where you are in your business journey. And if you're just looking for an email marketing program, stay with those platforms. I would say look to a marketing automation system like a HubSpot or a Pardot or something like that if you have the resources to put out, you know, all the content that we've been talking about, video, text, blog, social media, because at the end of the day, this software is just software. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to do the job for you. You really need the content creators behind it that are turning the crank. Because if you don't have that, you're going to way overspend for the software.
Can somebody be a customer of yours and use outside sources to write things for them, like a digital marketing firm kind of?
Definitely. So,
like a Wordsmith person.
Yeah, but look at Ajax Union. We've had Joe Applebaum on. They can do the tweeting and the posting.
Oh, yeah, and schedule it through
right.
HubSpot.
So you can go to
whatever.
Ajax Union to get your stuff done, and you can go to the Spoke Dude to SpokeDude.com.
That's taken.
Spokespot.com.
Okay, so what are some of the more unique ways you've seen HubSpot be used effectively to convert leads?
Yeah, great question. So, HubSpot, it's really great at spinning up landing pages and email templates quickly. So, if you're trying to put together, let's say, a campaign that you want to put on Facebook and you need, five email templates, two blog posts and some landing pages, HubSpot's a great tool because you can put all that together quickly. You can put it together in a cohesive campaign and do reporting on it to see what the ROI was on it. So
it'll measure everything.
It's going to measure, how much did I put, in paid search? Mm-hmm. How much did I put in Facebook ads? Mm-hmm. What was the time investment that I made on my blog
post? You can measure
your
paid search through HubSpot?
You can.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really
cool.
And
you don't just measure it on a cost per lead basis, but it's lead to sale.
Which leads actually work from
there. So as a sales director or marketing director, you want to see the high level metrics, what was the ROI, all those things.
Hold on, I got a call coming in from Mars. Oh.
that's where they can add a lot of value is to give you those high level metrics, and it's not just data points. You're seeing what the ROI on the campaign is.
And then you can shift based on it. So if one ad is performing better
This is the John value. The John value is he actually knows what to do, and it's not a guess. It's not a best guess. So if you have content and you have desire to go out and find your customer, he has an understanding about how and where to go out to be able to make that happen. And he can, and if he doesn't have an answer, he can partner with somebody who does have the answer, and he provides this amazing service for people. And to me, that takes away the mystery of what is social selling.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. John Pavone gets social selling, period, because he understands the core of the platforms that make social selling possible and probable. Mm. That's all I have to say. And thank you, John Pavone,
for being here. Yeah.
And you look great on the one shot, I got to say. You look pretty damn good today. Yeah, look at that. And he's from Philly. No, come on.
Don't blame me for that. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure.
We're glad you're here. Yeah.
Awesome. Bon voyage.
Yeah.
Au revoir. Thanks for joining us on Sell or Die. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Sell or Die.
And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Gittimer. On Facebook, I'm / Jeffrey Gittimer.
I'm at Jen in a New York Minute.
You follow me, you follow Jen. We tweet it, we Facebook it. You click it, you join it.
Thanks to our amazing guests today. Our producer is Doug Branson, and our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.